The rise of the urban light truck. This week, the government announced a levy on new utes to help pay for subsidies for electric vehicles. These all-purpose vehicles emit 1.5 times more carbon, cause more air pollution, and in cities are considered by some an increasing threat to cyclists and pedestrians. Alistair Woodward is a professor of epidemiology and biostatistics at the University of Auckland with a focus on public health and climate change. He's been leading research into the increasing weight of our vehicle stock and the risks this poses. Alistair joins the program now. Alistair, kia ora.
Kia ora.
Welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I remember not long ago, small cars like the Toyota Corolla were the most popular cars in New Zealand and certainly those that were most purchased in New Zealand. Why have we seen such a growth in the purchase of double cab utes, of SUVs, of light trucks in New Zealand?
Yes, it's an interesting question. I mean, fast food servings have got, bigger than ever. The average New Zealand house has, 50% more space than it did 20 years ago. And our vehicles are supersizing as well. They're all putting on weight, and the double cab ute seems to stand out as a particularly obvious example.
But this isn't just a New Zealand phenomenon, though, is it, Alistair? I mean, we see this in America, the growth of those big trucks in America that seem to be pervading a lot in the big cities that, it seems to me, weren't actually purchased for what they're being used for now, to drive in cities rather than off-road and in country areas.
You're quite right that America sets the pace, really. That's the home of the motor vehicle industry. And certainly what we buy in New Zealand tends to reflect what has been sold in the United States a few years before. And the light truck in America, a very interesting period in their history, went from being a niche vehicle used for specific purposes to being promoted for family transport. That's what it's mostly used for now.
So where did these big trucks, these light trucks, double cab utes, where did they come from? Why were they made?
Well, I think the story is one of light regulation and heavy promotion. They were niche vehicles. They weren't covered by a lot of the regulations that were imposed on the motor vehicle industry. And so they saw there was an opportunity to make these cheaply and then advertise them very heavily as vehicles that would be suitable for families, for people to drive in the city, for people to use for purposes that in the past, they managed with light cars.
So this is the thing. In New Zealand, there are a lot of people who have purchased SUVs, even double cab utes, people who are working, who need double cab utes, who want to ferry things around for part of their work, for towing and that kind of thing. That's potentially driven the increase of the amount of those kind of cars or vehicles that have been purchased in New Zealand. Now, the obvious question then is, what is wrong with that?
Yes, of course. Does it matter that our fleet is supersizing? A couple of things. One is that, as you've already said, double cab utes are being bought by everybody. People in the city, people in the country. They're being used mostly for private purposes. Of the Ford Rangers that were registered for the first time last year, only a quarter were registered for business use. The rest were private. The Household Travel Survey, which asks people about what they use vehicles for, found that two-thirds of ute trips, ute and van trips, were for non-work purposes, and 20% were to go shopping. So the utes are being used in ways that they were not designed for. A lot of the ute capacity is not used, underused utility, really. And the second point is that there are side effects. These vehicles weigh 2.5 tons. They're high, they're rigid, they've got big, high, perpendicular front ends. People put bull bars on them. So there are consequences for other road users, and that's particularly the case in the city.
So I will get to the safety elements of this because you've researched this a lot. And I think you also undertook some roadside research, right, about the amount of double cab utes that were being used, or obviously identifiable commercial utes that were being driven at a certain time. That's part of the research that you did. Can you talk about that, the methodology that you undertook to undertake that roadside research?
Well, our roadside study was small scale, really. It involved a student spending 5 hours in different parts of Auckland just observing the traffic. And what we saw was that only a minority of the utes were badged for commercial, you know, as commercial vehicles. I think only three of them were actually towing anything out of about 300. And about a quarter had bull bars or nudge bars added to the front of the vehicle.
So what's the problem with bull bars or nudge bars, Alistair?
Well, they're rigid structures put on the front of light trucks and SUVs, and their purpose is to protect the vehicle if it runs into stock. You know, in Australia, they're called roo bars for obvious reasons. Now, there are not too many kangaroos or bulls in Ponsonby, but there are plenty of utes with bull bars. And the problem is that if you run into a person, the injury that that person receives is much more severe than if they were struck by a ute without that kind of a structure.
And have we seen an increase in the incidence of people being hit by or being struck by, particularly pedestrians, even cyclists, being struck by double cab utes with bull bars or nudge bars in Auckland and cities in New Zealand?
I don't know of any research of that kind, but we do know in Auckland that the number of pedestrians that are killed or seriously injured each year is rising. We do know that almost two-thirds of the injured road users in Auckland are either pedestrians, cyclists or motorcyclists. So the safety of people using the street under their own power, you know, is a bigger issue and is perhaps becoming more of an issue than in the past.
I guess the other interesting thing, particularly if you focus on Auckland, though, is that because there are so many cars, not just double cab utes, but vehicles on the roads, and because there are so many traffic snarl-ups in Auckland and lots of places where you can't drive fast, so the traffic barely gets to the legal limit of 50 kilometres an hour anyway, is that if the traffic speed is so low, how then are big trucks double cab utes or SUVs therefore going to cause more of an issue if the traffic speed is so low?
Well, even at relatively slow speeds, it's not a good idea to be, you know, to be struck by a 2.5-ton truck, particularly one that's got a very high and very rigid front end. So it remains an issue even in the city at relatively low speeds. The city environment's incredibly stressful, and so while average speeds may be low, people are tempted, you know, to go faster wherever they can. And that is often a cause of pedestrian injuries when vehicles are speeding to try and get round corners or make up for time, and unexpectedly they come across a pedestrian.
So there's a point here, right, about driver behaviour, which I also want to touch on, because I think that you say in a paper that you've written that driver behaviour changes when someone gets behind a bigger car or a bigger truck, particularly in a high double cab ute or in a high SUV. So what have you found that supports the idea that the behaviour changes for people once they get into a bigger vehicle?
Well, this is not research we've done ourselves, but certainly there have been lots of studies elsewhere looking at driver behaviour. And as you say, it does appear to be the case that people drive more quickly the higher they're seated. So that's something to do with the sort of feedback that you get about moving through the environment. And it also appears, there also appears to be a relationship between risky driving behaviour and driving in big vehicles.
So what's the risky behaviour that we're talking about here?
More commonly, driving while impaired, more likely to take risks on cornering, more likely to drive more quickly. There's a variety of behaviours that have been observed to occur more commonly in people driving big vehicles.
Okay, I find that interesting because there'll be people who drive who will have an SUV or a not a double cab ute necessarily, but an SUV, but their behaviour doesn't change between the small car they drive and the SUV that they drive because both cars have similar functionalities, right? They're hands-free, they have fuel efficiency, that kind of thing. They're more efficient engines as well in the cars. So they'd be a little bit surprised when they hear that behaviour potentially becomes a little bit more risky simply because they're in a bigger car. What would your response be to those who say that?
Well, of course, I'm not saying that everybody who drives a ute drives in a risky fashion all the time. It's just the environment. You know, if you're more detached from your environment because you're higher up, because you've got a bigger car around you, because you've got a bigger cab in front of you, if you're more isolated from your environment, then you don't necessarily respond in the same way as if you're more intimately connected with the environment and more aware of the people around you.
Okay, Alyssa, let's talk about vehicle emissions. How much of emissions from land transport in New Zealand can we attribute or is known to be attributable to double cab utes or similar vehicles?
Well, I can't answer that question. I mean, obviously, about half carbon dioxide of New Zealand's carbon dioxide emissions come from transport. And most of that comes from road transport, and most of the road transport comes from passenger vehicles. Utes and SUVs have been, for 5 years or so, the most commonly sold vehicles, but they're still a smaller proportion of the total fleet. So I would expect that the total emissions at present emitted from SUVs and utes as a fraction of, you know, the grand total is small, but the trend is towards more and more of these vehicles on the road, and therefore their contribution is becoming increasingly important.
But we are starting to see more SUVs, hybrids, and in full disclosure here, Alistair, just so you know, so I've got a RAV4, Toyota RAV4 hybrid, right? So you're seeing a lot more hybrids coming online. There's talk now that Ford's talking about an electric vehicle, SUV or truck or similar. So we're starting to see more of these kinds of hybrid vehicles coming on spec and out to market. Would that not therefore decrease the impact that these cars will have on in terms of the carbon emissions simply because they will be, you know, PHEVs or indeed electric vehicles, full electric vehicles in time?
Yes, well, the plug-in hybrids certainly have better economy, and the RAV4 is a good example of that, and so their emissions are lower than the full fossil fuel version. How that will work with the big double cab utes, I'm not sure, because we haven't seen them. They haven't been well tested yet. Fully electric is what's required in order to bring the tailpipe emissions down to zero. And I'm not sure whether the technical issues associated with, you know, electrifying big heavy utes have altogether been solved. But that's certainly the direction we're going. And if all utes were electrified, then that would certainly help with the climate issue. But it doesn't help with the other two things I mentioned, which are obstruction. You know, these vehicles just take up an awful lot of road space in the city and make it more difficult for other people to get around. And the injury problem. I mean, if anything, fully electric utes will be even heavier than the diesel or petrol-powered ones. And therefore, from a hazard point of view, there'll be an even greater concern.
And, of course, there's been a lot of kickback around the government's announcement this week from many people who are saying, look, I need these kinds of vehicles for the work that I am doing. I'm a commercial operator. I need to be able to tow things. Most of those vehicles at the moment are diesel vehicles, so I need to be able to have the space in the car. There'll be families who'll say that they need the space because of the kids, and then obviously they may live out in wider suburbs or suburbs further away from cities. They have to drive into city for work, so they need those kind of vehicles to have the space to fit everyone into. And this is obviously, again, a part of the argument that's been happening this week after the government's announcement. But I guess the point that you're trying to make is, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, is that people are essentially, most people who are driving these vehicles aren't using them for commercial use. They're substituting their current cars for these bigger trucks, which are taking up more space on the road.
Yes, that's what the statistics tell us, that as I already mentioned, only a third of a quarter of the Ford Rangers that were registered last year were registered for business use. Three quarters were registered for private use. The travel surveys tell us that most ute trips are car-like trips. So the functionality of the ute, which is remarkable, is seldom used when people are driving in the city. And that's inefficient. And as I've mentioned, I think it's hazardous and it's damaging for the environment.
Alistair, do you mind me asking you what you drive?
I've got five bikes, and I could tell you about them in detail, but that would be boring.
Oh, so you're a cyclist in the mail, right, to get to work.
And I drive a Mazda 3, which is a very nice light car and gets me everywhere.
Yep. So again, and to come back to the projections part that you talked about, which I think is an important point, because the other thing I guess people would say is that, and this is also happening at the moment, is that people are looking for more options to be able to make the choices that they need to make for the lifestyles that they choose to live, or indeed the work that they choose to undertake. So they would argue against the fact that this limiting of options, in a truly Western liberal society, is impacting them or going to impact them in the future. So what would your message be to those when, they're hearing you say that these are impacting already on us at the moment, that they're going to have greater not just climate impacts, but also impacts on roads going forward, and particularly accidents and safety and that kind of thing? What would your response be to people who say, but we need these cars now and we will still need them in the future?
Well, of course, we want to give people choices. I mean, that's the sort of basis of how we organise things. But choices have consequences, and we've got to take account of the consequences. And the massification of the vehicle fleet, the increasing size of the vehicle fleet, has consequences. And we've been talking about those. It's pollution, it's climate, it's risk to other people. It's snarling up traffic and getting in the way of urban efficiency. So somehow we've got to manage all those things, don't we? And it's a case of thinking about alternatives to super big utes. How big is too big? I said the Ford Ranger is about 2.5 tons, 2.3 tons. Americans are now driving double cab utes that are 3.5 tons, and will be sold here shortly without doubt. At what point do we say, well, I think the balance is tipping here and we really need to find ways of encouraging and supporting alternative forms of transport, particularly in the city?
Is it also, Alistair, you mentioned marketability before, the way in which they're marketed, is it also about the kind of approach that's taken in marketing of these vehicles, where they're named things like, Raptor's a name that comes to mind. I don't even know if that is. I think that's the name of one of these kind of vehicles. These really kind of big, beastie kind of names that are attached to them. The masculinity aspect, I suppose, involved of naming these trucks like that. Is that also part of the reason why we've seen such a increased visible presence of these cars on the market and purchase of them?
It's been a very successful aspect of the promotion campaign. And again, this began in the United States. The advertising campaigns of the kind you describe were tested and developed in the United States and have now been rolled out here. And you're right, there is a Raptor. And the slogan for the big campaign to promote Raptors here in New Zealand last year was, dare to explore your inner beast. I don't want somebody exploring their inner beast at the wheel of a 2.5 ton truck while I'm trying to ride my bike to work. I just don't think that kind of messaging is terribly helpful given the challenges that we face in a climate constrained world, and one in which we're trying to create safe streets, not dangerous streets.
Alistair, we thank you very much for your time and for coming on to the program. No doubt there's going to be a lot of talk and feedback about that and about this interview, but we really appreciate you coming on the program this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was Alistair Woodward.